Support for Sound Ideas comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, the best hearing device center in the Pantograph Reader's Choice Awards for the sixth year in a row. Bloomington Normal Audiology thanks the listeners and their continued vote of confidence as the leaders in hearing and technology. With a practice featuring five doctors, including two who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient and helps you keep hearing the most important sounds of your life. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
This is Sound Ideas on WGLT, Bloomington Normal's public media. McLean County reached a new high for COVID hospitalizations yesterday with 23, and hospital capacity has dropped. Hospital officials in Bloomington Normal are plotting what to do once those beds are full. Eric Stock has this report.
We're truly at a critical point, really, in our juncture against our fight against COVID.
That's Colleen Cannaday, president of Carl Broman and Carl Eureka Hospitals. Cannaday and Lynn Fulton, president of OSF St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington, urge the public to rethink Thanksgiving plans. Fulton says, make it virtual if you must, but limit it to people inside your COVID bubble.
Let's provide some distance and give this pandemic time that it can wind down. We're in kind of the home stretch, we hope.
Hospital officials say their biggest worry as coronavirus cases rise is will they have enough healthcare staff to treat patients. Cannaday says staffing needs change by the hour, and as community spread of the coronavirus increases, it's getting harder to keep workers safe.
With such widespread community spread of COVID, more and more of our staff members are becoming infected.
Cannaday says about 4% of Carl Health System staff has contracted the coronavirus. At OSF Healthcare, that number is 15%, and several healthcare workers have died. Fulton says early in the pandemic, hospital staffs could travel to where they were needed most. Some OSF staff helped at hospitals in Chicago. Fulton says the luxury for hospitals to bring in temporary staff doesn't exist anymore.
Staffing is a finite resource. There isn't a truck full of nurses or techs or physicians just waiting to come in.
The hospitals say they have some leeway. They can pull staff from outpatient services as needed. They could also postpone elective surgeries, as some hospitals have recently done. Governor J.B. Pritzker put a temporary hold on those surgeries early in the pandemic to free up hospital space. Lynn Fulton at OSF says they don't want to do that again. OSF has since seen a rise in heart attacks and strokes.
Whether their appointment with our cardiologist or what have you was put off or done differently, we are seeing an escalation in those patients today. And that's another reason why we're trying to push and keep as many electives and ambulatory care as we can.
Hospital space is also a finite resource, but Carl and OSF say they have some flexibility. OSF St. Joseph recently opened a COVID unit by temporarily closing a transitional or short-term care center. Fulton says OSF can also transfer patients to its hospitals in Pontiac and Peoria if there's a bed shortage.
Critical patients coming in, and maybe we have a medical patient that they can take care of. We don't like to do that to patients and families, but if we can, so that we can continue to care for more people, we will do that and continue to do that.
Cannaday says Carl Broman can double up patients in hospital rooms and take over space that's currently used for outpatient services.
That would certainly be another lever that we would be able to pull if the volume got to the point that it necessitated that. So we're a long way from that.
McLean County is also exploring alternate care sites where patients could be treated. County Health Department Administrator Jessica McKnight says that would only be activated in an extreme situation. Both Carl and OSF have rolled out programs that enable patients with mild COVID cases to track their symptoms at home. Fulton and Cannaday say they hope a coronavirus vaccine will alleviate the burden on the healthcare system and get life back to normal. They are less optimistic about a new antibody treatment that the federal government has started to distribute. Regeneron has received emergency use authorization. 300,000 doses are supposed to be distributed by January. Carl Broman Colleen Cannaday says early supplies will be so limited, few patients will get the treatment.
It would be misleading for the community or provide a false sense of hope that there is this great treatment that's widely available at this point in time.
Lynn Fulton says only OSF's highest risk COVID patients would get Regeneron. The McLean County Health Department's Jessica McKnight says some of the recent COVID data shows some hope. Testing positivity rates have dropped in recent days from near record highs. She says maybe it's a sign that people are taking notice.
It's still too early to say that, hey, we've got this, but it's, hey, we can do this.
And McKnight says that starts with making smart choices during the holidays, fighting the urge to be with vulnerable loved ones. I'm Eric Stock.
The number of COVID patients hospitalized across the 20-county region that includes McLean County has increased for 10 consecutive days. This is Sound Ideas. A Hudson family is counting its blessings this year, even though its Thanksgiving plans are still up in the air. Eric Stock follows up with the Boitnots 1 year after receiving a diagnosis no family wants to hear.
Gina Boitnot says their dinner plans are generally last minute these days. It depends on how husband Earl feels. Earl Boitnot has an inoperable brain tumor.
There's days where it's good and there's days that it's bad. And then there's days that only last, what, 3-4 hours? And then it goes to bad. So it just kind of depends on the day, really.
Boitnot was diagnosed in October of last year. He was told he may only have a few months to live. He retired early from Bloomington Public Works, where he was employed for 21 years. At age 45, Boitnot seems to be at peace with his fate. When we spoke to him last year, shortly after his diagnosis, Boitnot said he just hoped to make it long enough to see his first grandson. After the birth, Boitnot had a change of heart.
Can't complain. I mean, it could be just not here. You can ask her, I was ready to let it go. And I seen a grandkid and it kind of changed my mind. It's like, well, I can do this.
Almost everything is hard for Boitnot. After several rounds of chemotherapy and radiation treatments he has undergone over the last year, the COVID pandemic has also made it harder. Boitnot rarely leaves home except for doctor's appointments. That's to keep himself and others safe from the coronavirus.
Well, that's a struggle because of their health and everything else. I don't want to make them sick, and it's hard to stay away, but they need it right now. You know, they don't need any more crap. And that goes for everybody, though.
Boitnot spent much of the spring and summer tending to his backyard garden, but sometimes head pain and instability were so bad he could barely stand. He uses a walking stick to get around when he has the energy and not the pain.
It does suck. I'll tell you that. But if you can make it through some of this stuff we do, you can make it through a lot of it.
There's one way the pandemic has helped. It has allowed wife Gina to be a full-time caretaker while keeping her job. She's working from home as a claims adjuster at Country Financial.
So for me, it's been kind of a blessing in disguise that this all hit, because that has allowed me to stay home and be home with him all day, every day.
Doctors put Boitnot on a chemotherapy drug last summer and say it could give him an additional 12 to 18 months. But the side effects were so bad, they took him off the drug. They plan to give him a new chemo treatment soon. His tumor in his brain has grown from the size of a golf ball to the size of a peach.
I don't know that they want to give us a prognosis at this point in time, but we'll take it every day we get.
The Boitnots are making the most of each day they get. They took pre-pandemic trips to Florida and Virginia to see relatives. They finished their home renovation that they started years before the diagnosis. And friends, family, and former co-workers have stepped in to help. They have hosted fundraisers at a GoFundMe page called Boitnot Strong to help cover medical expenses. Gina Boitnot says she wants others to understand they shouldn't let a health issue go unchecked. Earl Boitnot had several episodes of head pain last year.
Looking back, it's like, okay, I should really have seen the signs that clear back to May he was having pain.
Doctors believed Boitnot was suffering a migraine the first time he went to the emergency room in June of last year. When they returned to the ER several months later, Gina Boitnot suspected her husband's severe headaches and instability were signs of something more serious.
It didn't really dawn on me until I actually took him to the ER, and that was when I kind of argued with the staff a little bit and said, no, listen, this is what I see and this is not just a migraine.
Earl Boynton remains upbeat about his prognosis. He cherishes every day he has.
So it's just a matter of time when it comes and gets me, and I'm going to smile the whole way, hopefully, and we'll have some fun along the way.
The Boynton's hope they'll get to see their kids and grandkids this Thanksgiving. That's if Earl feels up to it. But the Boynton's are grateful they will at least get another Thanksgiving together. I'm Eric Stock.
The Boynton's Strong GoFundMe page has raised about $4,600, has a goal of $10,000. This is Sound Ideas. Tis the season of giving, and all around McLean County nonprofits are hoping that generosity is alive and well. Organizations that rely on community dollars say they've been fortunate throughout the pandemic. They say they hope that continues into the busiest time of year for fundraising, the holidays. Dana Vollmer reports.
Keeping food on people's table is a community endeavor. When Midwest Food Bank needed donors the most, people stepped up. That's according to Development Director Jada Hare. She says they've seen the number of new households that give money increase. Hare says that's likely in part because donors want to see direct aid going to families hurt by the pandemic.
Anything linked to health and human services and food being core to that has just had an increased general awareness in the population across our nation, really across the world. But I think that we've been fortunate to have a mission that was really well designed for this pandemic.
Hare says the biggest spike in first-time donors was in March and April, with a number of households handing over part of their COVID-19 stimulus check. Hare says now the goal is to reconnect with those households and develop an ongoing relationship to ensure those able to lend support continue to do so. One of the ways Midwest Food Bank is doing that is through virtual fund drives, reminding prospective donors that cash is the best way to make an impact for their neighbors in need.
For every dollar that Midwest Food Bank receives, we can turn that into over $30 because we have greater purchasing power, and plus we receive so many shipments of donated food, so we can stretch the consumer dollar further than what they could at the grocery store themselves.
Individual contributions make up the vast majority of the food bank's budget. Hare says about 10% comes from local business partners, which may be facing money troubles of their own. She says that means getting creative about the ways the food bank asks for help.
Instead of asking for dollars, knowing that some of the small businesses are going through challenges as well this year, so asking for promotions. So just as valuable as it is to receive a financial contribution, sharing the message of Midwest Food Bank through social media or through employee announcements or even customer announcements.
With Giving Tuesday around the corner, Hare says Midwest Food Bank wants to promote charitable contributions to organizations like theirs, but they're also trying to avoid the dreaded donor fatigue.
I think that there's probably a lot of heightened needs in the community, so we want to make sure that we're not over asking, but also we don't want to underemphasize the impact and the potential.
Luckily, there may be enough cash to go around. A data analysis by the financial tech company Smart Asset ranked McLean County residents among the most generous donors in Illinois. McLean County ranked 9th in the state for charitable giving based on IRS data. The study found nearly 8% of McLean County tax filers itemized a charitable contribution on the returns. Those contributions, on average, accounted for 1.35% of the person's salary. That's not just McLean County generosity. It's also a sign of a higher average income. Lower income people usually don't itemize because they rarely pass the threshold above the standard deduction. While some may need to pinch pennies after the pandemic financial blow, others make a point to continue supporting causes and organizations they care about, even if they can't give as much as usual. That's according to Norris Porter, Director of Development at the McLean County Museum of History. Porter has a lot of experience fundraising, most recently handling business sponsorships for the Baby Folds Festival of Trees. He says in both jobs, charitable giving has largely remained steady.
You know, everybody has been affected by the pandemic in some way, shape, or form, but many of the sponsors were able to continue at the same or similar levels as in past years.
Porter says museums and other nonprofits that drive income through memberships are having a harder time. Many have tried to find new ways to offer services virtually. The Museum of History, for example, successfully held its annual cemetery walk virtually. But the museum does so much more. Collection, preservation, and archival work continues even when it's not open to the public.
Membership dollars go into all of that. You know, I belong to a lot of different preservation kinds of things, the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library, the Gettysburg Foundation. I don't go to those places regularly, but through my membership, I know that I'm supporting the work that they do, and that's important.
The same is true for the arts. Jessa Hendricker handles development for the Community Players Theater, a volunteer-run performance group. Hendricker says they've seen charitable donations drop. They haven't been able to produce plays for in-person audiences.
Primarily, it's individual contributions where people would give maybe once a year or would donate because of a production. We were lucky to have a sponsorship for our last show, so a corporate sponsorship. So we're continuing to look out to engage with those in the community.
Hendricker says while their last show was ticketed, the next will be live streamed. And while these virtual performances are free to watch, they're not free to produce. There's licensing for scripts, camera equipment, set pieces, hair and makeup, and so on. Still, Hendricker says they're holding off on significant pushes for donor support.
With the pandemic and knowing that we were in a financially okay place, we just decided not to have a hard-hitting fundraising drive as we normally would. We just decided as a group that it would be better to encourage people to donate other places and not to ask for money.
The federal government also encourages support for nonprofits in need this giving season. The CARES Act allows people who don't itemize to deduct $300 on their 2020 tax returns for cash donations. It also raises the limit on cash gifts for those who itemize from 60% to 100% of their taxable income. For corporations, that limit goes from 10% to 25%. Nonprofits say these steps encourage donors to be a little more generous. I'm Dana Vollmer.
Giving Tuesday is next week. It's a day when many not-for-profits ask for holiday time donations to keep the doors open. This is Sound Ideas. Give Amazon a rest. That's the advice of a local art center director who says local artists have much more to offer this holiday season. WGLT arts correspondent Laura Kennedy has more.
The 44th annual Holiday Treasures exhibition and sale is currently underway at the McLean County Arts Center. Doug Johnson is the executive director there, and he says the yearly sale and exhibition allows the center the chance to show the work of local artists while helping shoppers bypass the usual gift baskets and games to give the gift of original art created in their own community.
Handmade objects as gifts, I think, speaks to a different level of caring. An Amazon box coming to someone's house. We have a whole lot of really terrific local artists. Actually, we have 24 artists in the Bloomington Normal community at large that are participating in this year's show, and each of them have unique talents, and it's a terrific opportunity for them to show their work and for people in the community to make a concerted effort to support local art and to give something that is truly unique.
So tell me about the criteria. When you approach doing the Holiday Treasures exhibition, do you approach that from a different mindset when you're doing an exhibition? Like, do you think, well, this is something that we really do have to be concerned with the artist selling this rather than just something that's on display?
Well, that's certainly part of it. Well, and our criteria is really different than it would be for an exhibition because we aren't looking for an artist to present a body of, 15 or 25 works that can hold together cohesively for a show. Instead, we're looking at works that are attractive and thoughtfully produced and would be at a price point that people could consider forgiving. You know, I don't think that generally we're going to have people to come in and say, I want to spend $5,000 on a painting, although that sometimes
you know, you can turn to the same artist year after year to show their work and offer it for sale. But how do you go about finding new artists? Do you basically keep your ear to the ground all year long hoping to find somebody, or do they come looking for you to have their work in the show?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's a little of both. You know, when we get our applications for our festivals, we look at those artists and say, gosh, you know, this is someone. Let's dog-ear this application because I think we can really continue a relationship with them within a different format. We aren't going to have an exhibition of Dave Lehman's handmade soaps, but gosh darn it, we sell the heck out of handmade soaps this time of year because it's something that is artisanal and a lovely gift. Almost everybody else in the show is someone who has been in it for many, many years. It's a little smaller show this year than we've had historically, which doesn't mean that we're not taking up the same amount of space, but we pared it down simply because a lot of artists aren't able to transport their work. So while we are still filling all three of our gallery spaces, it's not as cram-packed as it has been historically. One of the reasons that we have a little smaller Holiday Treasure show this year is because our classes have been ongoing. And while we do reduce the number of individuals in a class, we want to be able to use our gallery space upstairs for a potential classroom. So we could have, you know, six people taking a class and we'll be 10, 15 feet apart. We are anticipating that there could very well be the possibility that everything shuts down again. And if that's the case, then we would make ourselves for appointment-only shopping. And that's something that we're well prepared for.
That's Doug Johnson, Executive Director of the McLean County Arts Center in Bloomington. The Holiday Treasures exhibition and sale continues through December. I'm Laura Kennedy.
You can see photos from the holiday exhibition and sale at our website, WGLT.org. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. We had contributions today from Eric Stock, Dana Vollmer, and Laura Kennedy. I'm Ryan Denham. This is 89.1 FM, WGLT, and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.